from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When New Jersey Governor Chris Christie swept to a landslide re-election in November, his path to 2016 and a shot at the White House looked big and wide to many. Here was a Republican who could win big in a blue state, a GOP moderate who could talk tough and maybe unite the country. Then a four-day traffic jam on the busiest bridge in the world out of New Jersey turned into a political scandal around Christie. Talk of political bullying and payback. Now the knives are out. This hour on Point, Chris Christie's future in the GOP and on the national stage. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Was Chris Christie your guy for 2016? Was he never? Is he still? Republicans, was he too bipartisan for you? Stood up for the State of the State speech in Trenton, New Jersey yesterday, of course, the capital there, and had to go right at the George Washington Bridge scandal.
Now, the last week has certainly tested this administration. Mistakes were clearly made, and as a result, we let down the people we're entrusted to serve. I know our citizens deserve better, much better.
That's not all he had to say. We'll hear in a few minutes from Republican voices from Washington to GOP primary country. Joining me from Philadelphia is Matt Katz, reporter for WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio, where he covers Governor Christie, former political reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, where he wrote the Christie Chronicles. He was there for the State of the State speech yesterday. Matt Katz, welcome to On Point. What was the governor's attitude? Back in the limelight here.
Thank you, Tom. It was much different than his attitude that we've grown accustomed to over the last several years. He apologized, and then he went on to give a policy speech that was much more low-key than normal. He didn't have the zingers that he usually levels at Democrats and public employee unions. There weren't really any big laugh lines. And he also didn't bring to the table any new huge proposals. He basically just really had one policy, new policy idea. So this was a different Chris Christie than we've seen in the past, and it indicates that he's really in crisis mode here, trying to figure out how to move on from this.
He didn't say much about the George Washington Bridge or Fort Lee and all the rest, but what he had to say, he said right at the beginning, including talking about the inquiries that are out there now, and I want to ask you about those. Here's the governor.
Now, I'm the governor, and I'm ultimately responsible for all that happens on my watch, both good and bad. Now, without a doubt, we will cooperate with all appropriate inquiries to ensure that this breach of trust does not happen again.
Some of this is in his hands and some is not, Matt Katz. Describe for us, if you can, the inquiries that are now up on the rails or headed there, state and federal?
That's right. There's several. It's almost hard to keep track. We've got one stemming from the Senate, from the Senator Rockefeller. We have two, actually, from the New Jersey legislature tomorrow and throughout the week, really. The Democrats who control the New Jersey legislature are starting investigative committees both in the Senate and also in the state assembly. So there's two there. And then perhaps most significantly, the U.S. Attorney's Office is looking into this, and that's federal prosecutors, and that's a possible federal crimes that they may be looking for. It also means that these prosecutors could be putting pressure on some of those who have provided documents in the scandal, indicating that Christie officials knew about this, and they could be putting pressure on them to come forward with more information to try to get closer and closer to Christie himself. So he's got a lot of inquiries going forward, and this is not going to go away anytime soon.
The governor says, I wasn't involved. I didn't know what was going on here. What are the inquiries looking at exactly? What are the threads they're pulling on?
Well, we've got like 2,000 documents that were subpoenaed by Democrats in New Jersey. This is mostly correspondence between Christie officials about planning this traffic jam, closing these lanes of the George Washington Bridge, which led to the traffic jam, and then dealing with the after effect of it with media calling to try to figure out why there were 4 hours of traffic, why emergency vehicles had trouble getting through. The local mayor was very upset by this. But the documents are somewhat incomplete. It's almost as if we're picking things up in the middle of a conversation. It seems as though the people are passing orders to cause this traffic jam, but it seems as if they've got orders from elsewhere. So the inquiries are really trying to figure out who ordered this and what Christie knew about it and when. He's maintained he didn't know anything about the political ramifications of this until last week when all these documents were released. But the documents indicate that so many people close to him were aware of it, at least from the time it happened back in September, that it's tough to understand what the governor really knew and when he knew it.
Can you see from the polls, Matt, who's buying Christie's denial in New Jersey and who's not? How does it run politically or, you know, depending on perspective?
I haven't seen polls breaking down Democrats and Republicans. We do know that his approval rating has taken something of a hit, about 5 or 6 points into the two polls that have been done since the scandal broke last weekend. But it's still over 50%. I mean, he still has very enviable poll mm-hmm. numbers for any chief executive. There's a sense that maybe the one poll showed that most New Jerseyans think he might not be telling the full truth about the timeline and when he found out, but they also don't necessarily believe he planned it. So there's a kind of a wait and see attitude here. It is getting tremendous attention. 80% plus of New Jerseyans say they're paying attention to this. So if there's another shoe that drops, if there's more indication that Christie could be lying here, the poll numbers are going to take a hit. But he's really built up such, he's amassed such support over the last several years mm-hmm. in a blue state that, you know, he's getting a little bit of the benefit of the doubt right now.
And what about inside the Christie camp, his inner circle? Of course, he's had to let some of them go, but they've built up this kind of bulldozer toward the White House, image in recent years. Do you think that's still there? You've covered him for a long time. Is this a guy who says, "Wait a minute, you know, I've just taken a hit. I'm backing off," or is it still pedal to the metal if he can find the means?
They've backed off a bit. They were not as aggressive in pursuing media interviews the day after the state of the speech as they have in the past. Their chief spokesman, who's been caught up in this scandal, he has not been quoted in the media since it happened, and deputy spokesman sort of taking the reins. In some respects, they're going to try to move on. He's going to Florida this weekend to do a headline of fundraiser for the Republican gubernatorial candidate down there. He's got his inauguration for his second term next week, right at Ellis Island, which is going to carry great symbolism. So in some respects, they're going to try to move on, but they are taking a little bit more of a low-key approach to their public public appearances, and then they also need to rebuild their operation. I mean, you know, he lost the guy, Bill Stepien, who probably would have run his presidential campaign. I mean, he lost four people, and a few of them were very significant players within his inner circle. So he's got to take a look at the team he has, make sure nobody else is a liability, and try to rebuild if he can. And that's after he gets out of crisis mode, which he's in right now.
Matt Katz with WNYC in New Jersey Public Radio. Matt, thanks very much for being with us today.
You got it, Tom. Thanks.
Let me bring a national voice in right here. McKay Coppins, senior writer at BuzzFeed, covers the GOP, covered former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney in the 2012 presidential campaign. McKay Coppins, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Who's more gleeful over Christie's troubles? Democrats, who are happy to see him stumble, or Republicans, who aren't of his stripe?
That's a good question. There's actually, you know, that's one of the interesting dynamics we've seen unfold as this scandal has come into public view, is that a significant portion of the Republican Party, particularly the right wing, the Tea Party, has long mistrusted Chris Christie. Any goodwill that once existed between them when Christie was first beginning to, you know, gain a national profile has long since evaporated for a variety of reasons, right? Christie in 2012 really embraced President Obama in the final days of the presidential campaign in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, which a lot of conservatives saw as a betrayal of Mitt Romney. And
literally embraced, a hug on the battered
right.
beach.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, embraced him both literally and figuratively. There were lots of hugs in national photos. And if you scan the conservative blogosphere, you'll see a lot of very angry blog posts about Chris Christie with those photos there. And so what's been interesting to see is that since that controversy, this controversy has kind of begun to unfold, a lot of conservatives and Tea Party types have really been indulging in Schadenfreude and saying, you know, I'm willing to kind of just step back and let this guy get hammered because I don't consider him one of our own.
McKay Coppins, stand by there in New York. It's great to have you with us today. We're going to bring a couple of Republican perspectives into this conversation after a very short break right here. We're talking this hour about the fate of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Listeners, you can join us. Is this your favorite to be next president of the United States? Was he? Is he still? And how do you see Chris Christie? Bipartisan bridge builder? Bright promise? Bully? Bridge blocker? Have you been watching him over the years thinking this could be the one, a national leader? Republicans especially, how do you look at Chris Christie? Great hope? Too liberal? Too much hugging Obama? Just right? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Chris Christie, of course, a big Bruce Springsteen fan. Springsteen on with Jimmy Fallon last night, the two of them cutting loose with a song, Traffic Jam by Springsteen and Fallon. A little bit of that on our way out. 800-423-TALK. This is On Point.
This will all end, but till then, you're killing the working man who's stuck in the Governor Chris Christie for the New Jersey Traffic Jam. Oh, oh, oh. Down in Jersey.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fate of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie in the shadow of what's being called Bridgegate now, how he's seen around the country. Here's Chris Christie last week at his press conference. I am not a bully.
I am who I am, but I am not a bully. And what I will tell you is that the folks who have worked with me over a long period of time would, I believe, tell you that I'm tough. I've shown over the last 4 years in the tone that we've set here that I'm willing to compromise.
Still viable for 2016 with this swirling around? Senator John McCain on Sunday's State of the Union with Candy Crowley said Governor Christie should be able to move past the scandals.
I think that he can now move on as long as another shoe doesn't drop. You know, too often, Candy, we have seen these things that it's not the end of the story.
But does the GOP really want him? Here's Glenn Beck, conservative radio host, reacting to Christie's bridge scandal last Thursday, saying Christie's not a conservative.
I don't know how many Republicans really kind of want somebody like Chris Christie. But this Chris Christie Fort Lee story is reason number 1 through 100 on why he's a bad guy. This guy is so Nixonian. This guy is a progressive. And that's the key here. He is a progressive. He's not a conservative. He's a progressive.
Glenn Beck on Chris Christie. McKay Coppins, please stand by for just a second here. Keith Appel joins us right now. Senior VP at CRC Public Relations, conservative consulting firm in D.C., worked on Florida Governor Rick Scott's campaign in 2010, Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey's in 2004, Swift Boats Veterans for Truth in 2004. Keith Appel, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And with us out of Des Moines, but in New York today, Steve Dace, host of the nationally syndicated talk show Steve Dace Show, based in Des Moines, covered the Iowa caucuses in 2008 and saw party divide there as Democrats chose then Senator Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton. Maybe some parallels. Steve Dace, you say that looks a little bit like the Chris Christie situation with the GOP today. Does the GOP want Chris Christie, Steve?
I think I think Chris Christie, Tom, was in a lot of trouble within the 2016 GOP primary before this ever started. And I think that a lot of, and I've already been in meetings, I've talked to all kinds of people that lead major organizations or are major activists, because I live in the first of the nation caucus state. And frankly, I'm one of the first people they'll come and talk to when we start looking ahead. And we've learned a couple of lessons from 08 and from 2012. And the lessons we've learned are that we've got to find a candidate that can coalesce both social conservatives and the limited government crowd. And if we don't, then the party's the party establishment's anointed choice wins a weak plurality like McCain and like Romney did, and then they go out with an uninspired base, lose the general election. Every time we nominate the guy, the ruling elites and the liberal media tells us is the most electable, we lose. I had a guy call my show last night and say, well, you know, Christie's our only electable candidate. So I asked him, well, how are you enjoying the Romney presidency so far? And what do you think of McCain? I mean, you guys keep, I just heard you guys quote McCain. If what McCain is saying Republicans need to do to win is true, then why isn't McCain president?
So, I mean, Steve, you don't even care about Fort Lee. Glenn Beck saying he's so Nixonian. You're saying, never mind, he's just not conservative enough.
I completely agree with Beck. And we've learned that we've got to coalesce early, and we've got to find a candidate that can coalesce those two camps. And really, that's what the 2016 primary, Tom, is really going to be about. No, anybody the party establishment wants, anybody the Fox News all-stars want, anybody Karl Rove wants, has almost no shot of winning the Republican nomination in 2016, even before this started. And it goes back to something a friend of mine, Scott Rasmus, in the pollster said last year when he wrote in September, if given the environment of what's transpiring in the Republican Party and what's transpiring in the country, if Mitt Romney doesn't win this fall, he's likely going to be the last establishment candidate to ever win a Republican presidential nomination. And I think those words were prescient.
Keith Appel, I want to get you on this, but let's listen to a little more from Chris Christie yesterday, his State of the State speech. He has, famously, he's a tough talker. He can bring a lot of conservative sort of drama and emotion to a podium, but he also talks bipartisan a lot. Here he is in Trenton, New Jersey yesterday.
Four balanced budgets passed with bipartisan support. Pension reform passed with bipartisan support. Teacher tenure reform passed with bipartisan support. A cap on property taxes passed with bipartisan support. We acted, and we acted together. Even though the competition among states is fierce, the record on this is clear. No state in this country has shown more bipartisan cooperation and governance over the last 4 years than in New Jersey, and our people are proud of it.
Keith Appel in Washington, bipartisan support. Is that a feather in the cap for Chris Christie in the GOP now, or a kiss of death?
Tom, I think it's a lot like the case with Rudy Giuliani several years ago. He makes a great governor of New Jersey. Rudy made a great mayor of New York, but bombed as a presidential candidate in 2008 on the Republican side. And there are reasons for that. Steve alluded to a number of them. You know, New Jersey is a blue state, and a Republican governor is probably not going to accomplish very much with at least some kind of bipartisan cooperation. But what do you sacrifice for that cooperation, and how does that set you up if you intend to run for higher office? Rudy Giuliani was a great mayor of New York, but he bombed as a presidential candidate. I always thought that Chris Christie would be the second coming of Rudy. He would be Rudy too. And I think that on top of that, this episode really showcases the double-edged sword that is Chris Christie when it comes to Republicans and conservatives. On the one hand, the tough talk, no nonsense, tell the head of the unions where to go.
Yeah.
That persona has a great appeal to many conservatives who have wished more of their leaders would do the same thing. And so early on, I think there was a lot of appeal in that way. And Christie also cultivated that image. It was very interesting how you played the Springsteen Jimmy Fallon bumper
out last night. Yeah.
Going out into the break. When Chris Christie does the late night shows, as he did with Jimmy Fallon, he cultivates that persona. He stares down Jimmy Fallon. He yells at David Letterman. You know, but you can live and die by that. And this episode kind of shows you that there's something underneath. There's a real sense that that could blow up. Even people in the GOP establishment have to be concerned with that. And remember, the GOP establishment, the Republican money people in New York and Washington and L.A. and around the country, they wanted Chris Christie to run in 2012. He was their choice ahead of Mitt Romney. Their first choice was Mitch Daniels, the former governor of Indiana. And when he didn't run, they did everything but break Christie's arm off to run, and he didn't do it. And so they fell in line behind Romney. But they like him. But this episode, unfortunately, shows you the underside of the Christie administration, and that there perhaps are other incidents where he has cast a tone for those around him and those beneath him, that where they can go and bully other people, and whether it's members of his party, members of the other party. And that's going to come to light in a presidential primary, whether it's a caucus or a primary.
Keith Appel, stand by, and Steve Dace. McKay Coppins, jump in here. I'm having a little bit of an out-of-body experience because, of course, these fault lines have been there in the GOP, and there's real tension, no Tea Party versus mainstream, where the party ought to go. But it seems like 5 seconds ago that there were a lot of people prepared to get in behind Chris Christie, maybe not in Steve Dace's Iowa caucus territory, but certainly in Republican leadership circles in much of the country. McKay, what's happening with that now in the Fort Lee glare?
Right. I mean, I think what you just heard from Steve and Keith is a very good representation of where the Tea Party and, you know, right wing of the party stands. And that makes sense because they're both, you know, both Steve and Keith are very tapped into that element of the GOP. What really is problematic for Christie with this scandal is that it's making the GOP establishment, like Keith just alluded to, really second guess themselves in their support for Christie. Because, you know, we have to, you know, obviously we're talking all about this and, you know, Iowa is 2 years out still.
Yep.
But Christie never expected to be the Tea Party's favorite candidate. He was never going to run as the Tea Party's candidate. He was going to run as the establishment's candidate. He was probably going to have the most money. He was going to have a huge war chest. He was going to have a lot of endorsements from Washington. This was what Christie was banking on. And the strategy for Christie 2016 was very similar to the Romney 2012 strategy. The problem is that now the people I talk to in the GOP establishment, the donor circles, the operative class, you know, those people now are looking at Fort Lee and they're saying, yeah, the whole strategy that Christie had, which was to run as this tough guy, to present himself as, you know, as he said, tough but fair, is not going to work now because everyone's going to think of this traffic jam. Every time he chews out, you know, a liberal protester who tries to heckle him at a rally,
it'll be the bully.
People are going to think back to him as a bully, right? And so that's really the problem here, that not that the Tea Party is kind of enjoying this and delighting in his you know, trouble, but more that the establishment and that the GOP, you know, operative and donor class, who really liked Christie, are now really wondering whether he has what it takes. The people I'm talking to are now kind of desperately searching for who would replace Christie. Obviously, a lot of them are in the kind of wait and see mode. They're saying, you know, it's possible that he'll emerge from this damaged, but not fatally so. But a lot of them now are looking, you know, if Christie, it doesn't have what it takes, who's going to take his place? They're looking at places, people like Scott Walker, people like Paul Ryan. Yeah, wow. Scott Walker, Wisconsin Governor Paul Ryan, Wisconsin Congressman. So, you know, they're looking around, but nobody has kind of the outsized personality and reputation that Christie brought to the table. And that obviously is very troubling.
And is this theme really gone, McKay? I'll take it to Keith and Steve Dace. But this was Chris Christie. This was Asbury Park, New Jersey, November, brand newly reelected here. His victory speech saying that Washington could learn a lesson about Americans coming together.
I know that tonight a dispirited America, angry with their dysfunctional government in Washington, looks to New Jersey to say, is what I think happening really happening? Are people really coming together?
Steve Dace, is that really a dead theme? Is that really not going to fly?
No. And really, the numbers and his actions, Tom, tell the story. First of all, that same night, I believe there was one net gain seat in the entire down ballot races for Republicans statewide.
In New Jersey, heavily Democratic state, yeah.
Which tells you, and if you look at his record, he's basically a moderate Democrat. And if you look at the way he's reacted to this story, the whole story's genesis is that the Republican governor, who's going to win by double digits, it's just a matter of what the final number is, the Republican governor is upset that a Democrat mayor will not endorse Newsom. And then yesterday at his State of the State address, when he wants to change the topic from this and introduce a new legislative initiative, his idea is, I'm going to change the topic to the Common Core, which right now probably has more organized conservative resistance across the country to it than any other singular issue at the moment. The guy's just basically a Democrat, a tough-talking moderate Democrat, and that's why he won in a Democrat state.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Dace, please stand by. Keith Appel, lots of listeners who want to get in here. Sullivan, Wisconsin, Rich is calling. Rich, you're on the air. What do you think?
If Governor Chris Christie sought revenge, he needs to know that revenge politics are pretty much dead in this country. There's the old saying, he who seeks revenge must remember to dig two graves. And the other aphorism that goes with that is Abe Lincoln's comment that, am I not destroying my enemies when I turn them into my friends? The GOP is too focused on revenge politics to be successful, and Christie, I think, cannot recover from this.
So you're tying Fort Lee around his neck and saying, dig two graves when you go for revenge? Well, I don't know, but Rich, we've got it. One more. Iowa City, Iowa. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I think Governor Christie knew about this before he admitted it, because I know if I was the mayor of Fort Lee, I would be calling Mr. Christie up and wanting to know what the problem was with his end of the traffic. I think there's too much money in that area. People were caught in that traffic jam. I think people demanded answers and wanted answers, and he dodged a bullet somehow. And I just wonder if they make clown shoes big enough to fit him.
Well, you just don't buy it. Are you making this observation, Joe, as a Republican, a Democrat? What, are you a Democrat happy to see him stumble?
I'm an independent, and I believe that he knew about it before, you know, he said anything. I think he knew about this long ago, and I think he's trying to cover his tracks.
Joe, I appreciate your call. One more here. Uniontown, Ohio. Eve is calling. Hi, Eve. You're on the air.
Hi. I usually vote conservative, but I don't vote strictly along party lines,
okay,
state or federal. And I try to compare the two people who are up and take them, you know, try to see what the evidence is.
Yeah.
I find it kind of funny that Hillary is defensive and opinionated, and people label her as tough. Christie is defensive and tough, and then he's labeled as a bully. And also, four days of traffic tie-up, and the evidence seems to support him in what he says. And then the Benghazi evidence seems to undermine Hillary's authority. So I try to take that, try to see what the evidence
says. So if you like to pick between two, if it were Hillary and Chris Christie, which way it sounds like you'd go even now toward Christie, Eve? Why?
Because he's been up front. He has not been as defensive as Hillary has been when she is questioned about the Benghazi. He's been pretty open. It sounds like he's more apologetic about what happened.
Eve, we've got it. I appreciate your call, Eve. Our time is short before the break. McKay Coppins, I mean, here's a Quinnipiac poll out saying that people now see him 54-40% as more a leader than a bully, even after all the Fort Lee busiest bridge in the world problems, McKay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting to see his entire base of support, which is sizable both nationally and in New Jersey, completely evaporate overnight. I think that the question is going forward with, you know, four or five investigations now into various elements of his administration. How much will the firewall hold up, right? Will he be able to still say, this was my staff, I didn't know about it? Or is it eventually going to come out that he knew more than he let on early in this process? That's where we're really going to see whether he can survive this firestorm.
Hey, Steve, we've just got 20 seconds before the break. He's about to head up the Republican Governors Organization. Can he go out and rebuild with those governors? Say, look, guys, you all know how this rolls. Work with me now.
Last night on my show, Tom, I had a longtime New Jersey Republican consultant who worked for Steve Lonigan's U.S. Senate campaign, and he told me on the show he thinks members of Christie's administration are going to prison over this. So I think that probably answers your question.
Steve Days of the Steve Days Show out of Des Moines, Iowa, with us today from New York. Please stand by. Keith Appel in Washington, D.C. McKay Coppins with BuzzFeed with us out of New York today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fate of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie in the shadow of Bridgegate, how he's seen around the country, how he's seen in the GOP. Three, four, maybe five inquiries out there now into what happened with the traffic at Fort Lee. Here's Thomas Wisniewski, head of the New Jersey Assembly's Transportation Committee, the committee investigating the shutdown of the George Washington Bridge, saying he's skeptical about Chris Christie's claim that he knew nothing about the situation.
I don't think it's possible for all of those people to be involved and know, and for the governor to absolutely have no communication. Remember, this was in the midst of his reelection campaign. Any governor running for reelection is going to want to know about problems that come up, if for no other reason, to know how to respond when asked a question.
Yeah, well, there will be more questions. That's not over. But there were big hopes for this politician, this leader, many quarters in the GOP. We're also hearing plenty of second-guessing going on here today. Lots of comments online. I mean, there's admiration for Chris Christie's particular brand of charisma. Even now, Rollo writes to us, got to admit he'd put the bully in bully pulpit. Kurt says, what's changed is my belief that Christie is smart enough to avoid overreaching. Clearly he's not, since this scandal is pure overreach. William, maybe from the Tea Party perspective, writes to us, hey, big guy, where are your bipartisan supporters now? Keith Appel, is it just, how do I put this? Karl Rove is still interested in this guy. Steve Dace is suggesting Fox News is still interested in Chris Christie. Is it really gospel now in the GOP that you can't be that mainstream, big tent, reach out leader and win the GOP nomination and the White House?
I think it's a case-by-case basis, and it depends on the individual. Let me give you an instance, and I'd love to hear Steve's take on this.
Yeah.
Because you talked earlier about bipartisanship, and I talked to you about the cost of that and the image of Chris Christie as a bully. Let me wrap that all together for you.
Okay.
In the election just concluded, the state Senate Republicans were trying to win majority in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
The head of the Senate Republicans is Tom Kaine Jr., son of the former governor Tom Kaine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come any more GOP establishment minted than Tom Kaine Jr.
Yep.
And his job was to win a majority. He needed to win five seats.
And his dad, a mentor to Chris Christie.
Correct. But Chris Christie opposed three of his candidates and protected and campaigned for three Democratic incumbents in South Jersey. And they won. And that prevented the Republicans from gaining a majority in the state Senate.
Why did he do that? Did they agree with him on particular policies where he needed their vote?
He got their votes on some bills. And let's face it, if you want to pay back a political ally from another party, there are all kinds of ways to do it. But when you directly oppose your party's efforts to win a majority, that's unprecedented. And it went further. After the election was over, the state Senate president in New Jersey, their version of Harry Reid in Washington, asked Christie to remove Tom Kaine as the Republican leader in the state Senate. And he tried to do it. He put up another Republican senator in an election within that caucus, and Kaine managed to hold on and win. But that would be equivalent to Harry Reid telling a Republican president, hey, I want you to get rid of Mitch McConnell as the Senate Republican leader in the U.S. Senate.
But you're not telling me, Keith, that you would expect Chris Christie to go to Washington and campaign for a Democratic majority in the Congress.
He just set the precedent. He just did it in New Jersey. That's the problem. He makes a great governor of New Jersey. But if you're a Senate or House leader in Congress right now in the Republican Party or a leadership aide, and you're looking at that and seeing a Republican chief executive openly oppose his own party, that has to concern you. because once that person is president, there's no stopping what that person does.
Steve Dace, you know, your perspective may not be the same as mine here, but I do hear from a lot of people saying we've got to get over this paralyzing polarization in this country and get some things done, or we're just going to wither on the vine in this century. Surely that's what Chris Christie intended to speak to. You could hear it in his victory speech on as a second-term governor in New Jersey. Is that really got no traction in your neck of the woods in the GOP, Steve?
Well, just to follow up what you just heard.
Yeah.
You've got in the last few years, you had the Republican Party establishment wanted Charlie Crist in the U.S. Senate, not Marco Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
And now Charlie Crist is running for governor as a Democrat.
What?
The Republican Party establishment, Chris Christie's buddies, they wanted Mr. Grayson, as I think was his name, the senator from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
He's now working for a Democrat PAC to recruit Democrat candidates. They didn't want Rand Paul. We've got former Republicans donating money to Sam Nunn's daughter down in Georgia. So the idea that if you put these people in power in Washington, D.C., they actually won't work against you is pretty far-fetched, because we actually have a record of them actually doing so. There is a very existential question going on right now in the Republican Party, Tom, and it really comes down to this. You just mentioned get things done, which I would define as, do we want to manage the decay better, or do we want to get back to what our founding fathers envisioned, which is government's only role is to protect our God-given rights? And right now, a lot of people like me around the country think that our God-given rights are more imperiled right now than they've been since we drove the Redcoats from our shores. And that's the real existential question going on right now in the Republican Party.
Wow, watch out, Chris Christie. Right there, Steve Dace does not have your back. Steve in New Orleans, Louisiana. Steve, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that the whole bridge scandal is really, as a lot of your panelists have been saying, irrelevant to Christie's presidential aspirations. And for a lot of the reasons given, I think the relevant comparison for Christie is more George Pataki running for president or Giuliani running for president, where they'll get 2% in the primary rather than a Romney or a McCain. I mean, remember Romney, although he'd been governor of Massachusetts and sort of was accused of inventing Obamacare, was, at the end of the day, very culturally conservative. So he could at least speak that language to Republican primary voters. McCain, although he's establishment, is certainly no Northeastern liberal.
Think Chris Christie was a 2%er, Steve? He was a 2% likelihood? That marginal?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think the sort of bipartisan, you know, the raising of bipartisan action, to sort of a higher goal is really very much an inside the beltway thing that does not resound with primary voters. And that's why the media were very excited when Giuliani was running. They were very
absolutely
excited,
right,
when Pataki was running. And the primary started, and everybody, you know, you look at the 2012 Republican primary, and the degree to which Romney had to thread the needle, even as a staunch cultural conservative,
yep,
was impressive. Because before Iowa, Michelle Bachmann was way ahead in the polls. After Iowa, they tried to coalesce around Governor Perry. And after Perry, they tried to coalesce around Herman Cain.
Wow. Steve, we got it. You bring the history back. No love lost there again for Chris Christie. McKay Coppins, what is this? I mean, a week ago, he was, hey, hand the banner to that guy in big swaths of the country. And, now Steve Dace is saying, you want to talk bipartisanship? You're just talking managing decay.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things here, right? We're talking about Republican primary voters, and then we're talking about general election voters, which is the rest of the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Steve and Keith are right, and your caller was right, that Republican primary voters are not wild about bipartisanship, which is why you don't hear in Republican primary campaigning, whether it's from Mitt Romney or even John Huntsman, the very moderate Republican, or, you know, Rick Santorum or anyone, no one goes up there and gives fiery speeches about the importance of bipartisanship.
Mm.
And that's true of the Democratic primary as well. Primary voters tend to be activists. They tend to be much more orthodox in their political views. But I think the reason that so many people were pinning their hopes on Chris Christie was because they thought that he, you know, if he could win 60% of the vote in New Jersey, he could win a majority of the national vote as well. Now, there were always reasons to be skeptical of that anyway, right? That part of the reason the North Northeast Republican establishment liked Chris Christie so much is because of the specific issues he decided to tack left on, right? He was anti-union, yes, which is what, you know, corporate executives tend to like, but he was also pro-immigration, another issue that even corporate Republicans tend to like, right? He's tended to stay away from social issues, which Northeastern moderate Republicans do not get fired up about, but he was very big on taking on issues like the deficit and lowering taxes. And so Chris Christie's agenda and platform has always been, it seemed, tailored exactly to what Northeastern establishment Republicans who tend to be business owners and job creators really liked. It's unclear whether the rest of the country ever would have gotten as excited about Christie.
In the GOP anyway, you're our hard-bitten reporter here. Steve Day says, hey, where's President Dole, President McCain, President Robbie, Romney, no more moderates. But can you see, on the other hand, do you see a tougher, more right-wing Republican candidate being able to take enough out of the middle to win?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. I hear what Steve's saying, and I hear it a lot from conservative activists that I talk to. At the same time, you know, there's a real question about whether a Ted Cruz could actually win 51% of the United States voter electorate, right?
Yep.
I think that the argument they tend to make, and I'm sure you'll hear Steve and Keith make it, is that the way Republicans can win is by drawing a very sharp contrast with their opponents, not kind of being Democrat light, which is a phrase you hear thrown around a lot. But when you really drill down to the numbers, the question is, what is the coalition that they build? What are the various elements of the United States electorate that they cobble together as a hard right Tea Party candidate to win a national election? I don't think that question has been answered yet, although, you know, a lot of conservatives hope it will be in 2016. A
couple more callers here. Cheryl in Boston. Thanks for calling, Cheryl. You're on.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. I just want to make a quick statement and ask a question. I'm just astounded that this is being discussed along party lines, because to me this seems like the bridge incident, such a grave abuse of power.
I agree.
It was dangerous. It must have cost money. I read an article recently about a man who sparked a forest fire out west and is being charged $2 million for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know what the cost of this was. Even if we believe Chris Christie did not know, a company, say, like Freedom Industries, will probably be charged for what their employee did.
For the chemical spill in West Virginia, okay, yeah.
Right. Why would Chris Christie not be held responsible for this? Your guest said that maybe some staffers may go to jail over this. He ultimately is at the helm of this. I mean, I'm a parent of a teenager. If underage kids drink on my property without me knowing, I can be sued.
So you want to be talking sanctions here, Cheryl, and we hear that. Keith Appel, do you believe, you've been around politics a lot, do you believe Chris Christie's denial that he knew anything about a deliberate closing of the bridge?
I'll take what he says at face value. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But you never know when the next shoe drops. That's the problem. And to your point a moment ago about, you know, as you were discussing with McKay, about can a Republican, can a conservative, you know, win nationwide?
Well, Chris Christie is a Republican. I was asking about somebody to the right of Chris Christie.
I'm answering your question.
Yep.
The Republican field in 2016 is going to be a lot more substantive than it was in 2012.
Agreed.
Mitt Romney was probably the only top-tier candidate in that field. Scott Walker has won several times in Wisconsin in a very swing state. Marco Rubio has won statewide in perhaps the biggest swing state of them all. Mike Pence won statewide, the governor of Indiana. It's going to be a much more substantive field. And to get back to what Steve was saying a moment ago, when you know, bipartisanship becomes a dirty word, it's not a dirty word if everybody's in it together and trying to do what's right for the country. But we've had 5 years now of the Obama administration, and the results are in. You got one out of three Americans are not working. One out of six of Americans are on food stamps. There has to be a better way to do this. And the Republicans keep getting attacked by the Democrats, you know, for being, you know, for trying to stop what's going on. But what has been going on has not been productive. And so in a primary situation, when someone gets up and says bipartisanship, they look through the prism of the last 5-6 years and say, are you kidding me? Where are your new ideas in order to bring the middle along?
Keith, got it. Steve Dace, you know, here I'm looking at this new poll, Quinnipiac. This is after the scandalous stuff came out. And still, 74% to 23% of respondents say Chris Christie a strong leader. Are those people and Karl Rove all wrong about this guy?
Again, if all of that stuff was true, where is President Romney? Where's President McCain?
Well, people didn't say strong leader on Mitt Romney.
But the polling is done from is done from a template of conventional wisdom. You guys mentioned Scott Walker earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If Scott Walker is where the Republican establishment has to go, hallelujah, because he would be more conservative than any Republican presidential nominee since Reagan. And I think that's why they are working. That's why there was so much emphasis on Chris Christie, because their bench is very thin. Even places they would have to go as backups, perhaps, maybe Marco Rubio, maybe Scott Walker. Those guys are far more conservative than the last several Republican presidential nominees have been. And I think that ultimately you get back to what the caller said also about who's liable ultimately for this. And I completely agree with absolutely every word that she said. Whether he knew about it or not, it's very difficult to say, I'm the guy, the buck stops here. But on the other hand, I didn't know about everything. It's similar to what Keith was just saying about Obama talking about being so bipartisan. But in the end, the country's now more polarized 5 years later. You can't be both things, because in the end, who created an atmosphere where your aides thought, even if they acted unilaterally without your knowledge, what kind of atmosphere exists amongst your leadership structure where people think, hey, this is how we'll get back at folks. We'll take the busiest bridge on planet Earth and we will shut it down for four hours. And then we'll go outside and watch and we'll laugh and then we'll email and text each other and our snarky remarks and put it on the record. And then we'll mock the people that are sitting there struggling when who knows if somebody's wife is pregnant, someone's having a heart attack, there's an emergency.
It's beyond irresponsible.
McKay
Coppins, you know, I have to say, there is more dancing on the grave of Chris Christie from our GOP voices here than I ever imagined when we booked this show today. Does he have some reinforcements over the hill? Is Karl Rove
you thought you were booking some conservatives who might stand up for Christie?
I don't know. This is just more than I expected. Where are the troops for Christie?
You know, I wrote this right after the scandal first unfolded. It's amazing to what degree Chris Christie has burned the bridge between himself and the Tea Party. I think the show today really demonstrates that. And I don't see any scenario under which the Tea Party and conservatives are going to come rallying to his cause. That said, there will be Republicans who will try to defend him.
Smoke rising over Trenton. McKay Coppins with BuzzFeed, thank you so much. Steve Dace of The Steve Dace Show, thank you. Keith Appel in Washington, thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.